The connection points I hear to monasticism nearly everywhere in the emerging spiritual landscape are beyond intriguing. The wandering, ascetic, eccentric sages known as the Desert Fathers and Mothers, the visionaries like Benedict or Francis or Ignatius of Loyola across the many centuries in which Catholicism was the only way to be Christian, they all emerged at a distance from a church they experienced to have grown imperial, externally domesticated, and inwardly cold, out of touch with its own spiritual core. And there is a kindred shift in the nuns' generation of young Christians, including evangelicals and others, people who have not rejected the faith of their childhood, but grew up allergic to stridency and determined to reform it. This is Becoming Wise, an inquiry into the mystery and the art of living. I'm Krista Tippett. One pivotal, loosely federated movement is called the New Monasticism. Shane Claiborne is now one of its guiding lights and at 40, one of its elders. He is a lanky, charismatic, dreadlocked figure who looks like he might have been at home with the Desert Fathers and Mothers. While at Eastern University outside Philadelphia, an evangelical college with a long history of social action, he and some friends became involved in championing and caring for a large number of homeless people who had moved into an abandoned church in North Philadelphia and were facing forced removal. The irony was not lost on them.
You know, I start reading this stuff that Jesus said, and I'm just like, man, does anyone really believe this anymore? And Mother Teresa was one of those people that I felt just lived so magnetically and authentically the simple words and teaching of Jesus. So we wrote her a letter, you know, and we said, hey, we don't know if you give internships out there in Calcutta, but we would love to come work. And she says, yeah, come on out.
And you worked in a leper colony there, and, you know, that has such biblical echoes, right? And also, I think it seems to not only to belong to Bible stories for people in this culture, but to a world that surely doesn't exist anymore, right? Lepers surely don't exist anymore. What did you learn there in that work about the Bible, about this faith that you couldn't have learned anywhere else?
Boy, yeah, I learned so much. I think part of what I learned was that it wasn't just enough to protest the things that were wrong in the world, because I think we had been sucked up into this real movement of social justice and going out and getting arrested and protesting everything that was wrong. So we knew what we were against. We just didn't know what we were for, you know? And in that leper colony, I learned from a group of people who had been basically forced by their society to create a new society in the shell of the old one. And so it was really there that I kind of caught that vision of let's build something new together. You know, as one of my heroes, Dorothy Day, said, let's build a society where it's easier for people to be good to each other, you know.
When Shane and his friends came back from Calcutta, they founded a community called The Simple Way. This is not a monastic order in the traditional sense, but an intentional community that does draw on some monastic wisdom about structuring a rhythm of life together. Single people and couples and families share life with each other and the city around them. Over time, it's grown from one house to six and a multitude of projects and ministries. It's a place of pilgrimage for young people from many backgrounds. It's a beacon for a larger web of community, a constellation of other groups in other places, and for church and spiritual life reimagined.
There was a group of us out of that student movement that ended up going, let's try to do church like the old days. You know, we would read in the book of Acts that all of the believers were together and shared everything in common. No one claimed any of their possessions were their own, but they shared everything, and there were no needy persons among them. Right. We had all kinds of baggage from the church, you know, recovering evangelicals and disenchanted Catholics, you know, and we just said, we're going to stop complaining about the church that we've experienced and try to become the church that we dream of. And then we had no huge visions for transforming our neighborhood or something. We were coming very much as learners, and we opened our door up to people. Our mission was just to love God, love people, and follow Jesus. And we said, if we can figure that out, then we'll be doing well, you know?
And were you all kind of just out of college, 22, 23?
Yeah, that's right. And so we had a lot of homeless folks that came by the house. We had a lot of kids that needed help with homework, and everything that we do just sort of bubbled up out of that, you know? And in North Philly, there's a lot of struggles, but there's also a lot of hope. And so we try to feed each other hope and to reclaim abandoned spaces. So you know, you're important, Krista, because I came down here after I'm missing out on all the gardening today. We're reclaiming two lots on our block where they're formerly just filled with trash and needles, and we're reclaiming that space and doing gardens with our neighborhood. So we have a little thrift store, and as soon as I leave here, we'll be giving out about 50 bags of food to folks that need food and those sorts of things. But I think it's also that initially when we started the community, we were just responding to crises, you know, and needs and everything. Mm-hmm. And then there comes a point where Dr. Martin Luther King said so well, he said, we're called to be the good Samaritan and lift our neighbor out of the ditch. But after you lift so many people out of the ditch, you start to say, maybe the whole road to Jericho needs to be transformed.
You know, there's something in the way you, not just the way you see your Christianity, but the way you look at the world, that it's a very holistic vision. There's a self-awareness. Mm. There's kind of a global sensibility. So, for example, you've taken the old adage that if you give someone a fish, they'll eat for a day, but if you teach them how to fish, they can eat for a lifetime, right? But you say, we also need to ask who owns the pond and who polluted it.
Right.
That's new, I think. And I'm not sure people, human beings, have previously been free, lived in a world where they could think that way or see all the connections. Have you thought about this, about your generation and this time?
Everywhere I go, I am so encouraged by the questions that people are asking, especially even within the evangelical church that's been so scared of a lot of those questions. Mm-hmm. And most people my age that I see, even within the evangelical church, like transcend those categories of left and right and really are wanting to know how to create a better world and know that the world that we've been handed is very fragile. And there's a lot of Christians, though, that are going, we don't just need, you know, these celebrities to work out, you know, to change the world. We need to figure out how to live differently ourselves and how to live with some imagination and some creativity and give ourselves for something bigger than just our own little circle of friends. And so that to me, that's so encouraging. And I'm convinced that if the Christian church loses this generation, it will be not because we didn't entertain them, but because we didn't dare them, you know, with the truth of the world. And it won't be because we'd made the gospel too hard, but because we made it too easy and we just played games with kids and didn't actually challenge them to think about how they live. And I think what I really love about much of what's happening in the younger generation is there's a sense that, man, we all have a lot of contradictions and we don't need to feel like we have it all figured out. There's something just as magnetic as a church that seems to like pretend that we've all got it together, which is definitely the church that I grew up in. You know, there's something magnetic about a group of people that say, hey, we don't have it all figured out and we need each other. You know, we're broken people. And in the middle of that brokenness, I feel like the Spirit is able to connect.
Shane Claiborne is the author of a new book about the death penalty, Executing Grace. His first book, The Irresistible Revolution, is a cherished work for me and for many.
On Being is supported in part by Penguin Press, publishers of Krista Tippett's New York Times bestselling book, Becoming Wise, An Inquiry into the Mystery and Art of Living. Publishers Weekly says, pulling together and going beyond the accumulated knowledge of her interviews, this book is an incantatory trip into the paradoxical and profound. Becoming Wise is available now, wherever books are sold.